What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Welcome to Washington Today for this 12th day of August. I'm your host, Greta Bronner. 83 days until Election Day, and the campaigns are heating up. After yesterday's announcement from the Biden campaign that Senator Kamala Harris would be his running mate, today they campaigned together for the first time. More on that in a minute. Elsewhere, Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease expert, said he has serious doubts that Russia's experimental coronavirus vaccine is safe and effective. Russia has pledged to administer the vaccine to millions of people even before it has gone through crucial large-scale testing. And finally, over the past year, Americans' confidence in the police has dropped to a record low, with an increasing disparity between white and black Americans, a new Gallup poll has found. Overall, confidence in the police declined 5 percentage points to 48%. The report found, in the first time in the poll's 27 history, that confidence levels fell below 50%. You can find more at thewashingtonpost.com. But back to campaign 2020 with former Vice President and presumptive Democratic nominee Joe Biden, who today introduced his running mate, California Senator Kamala Harris. Here's Vice President Joe Biden.
Today is not only the day I'm proud to introduce Senator Kamala Harris as the vice presidential nominee of the Democratic Party. It's also the third anniversary of that terrible day in Charlottesville. Remember what it felt like to see those neo-Nazis, close your eyes, and those Klansmen, white supremacists, coming out of fields, carrying lighted torches, faces contorted, bulging veins, pouring into the streets of historic American city, spewing the same anti-Semitic bile we heard in Hitler's Germany in the 30s. Remember how it felt to see a violent clash ensue between those celebrating hate and those standing against it? It was a wake-up call for all of us as a country. For me, it was a call to action. My father used to say, silence is complicity, not original to him, but he believed it. At that moment, I knew I couldn't stand by and let Donald Trump, a man who went on to say, when asked about what he thought, he said there were very fine people on both sides. Quote, very fine people on both sides. No president of the United States of America has ever said anything like that. See him continue to attack everything that makes America, America. I knew we were in the battle for the soul of the nation. That's when I decided to run. And I'm proud now to have Senator Harris at my side in that battle because she shares with the same intensity I do. For she's someone who knows what's at stake. The question is, for all Americans to answer, who are we as a nation? What do we stand for? And most importantly, what do we want to be? You know, someone who knows that the future of this country is limited only by the barriers we place on our own imaginations, because there's nothing Americans cannot achieve when we put our minds to it and we do it together. One of the reasons I chose Kamala is because we both believe that we can define America simply in one word: possibilities.
Vice President Joe Biden earlier today in Wilmington. His running mate, 55-year-old Kamala Harris, is used to the public eye. She herself was a contender for the Democratic nomination until she dropped out of the race in December of 2019. Here's Kamala Harris from today.
This is a moment of real consequence for America. everything we care about, our economy, our health, our children, the kind of country we live in. It's all on the line. We're reeling from the worst public health crisis in a century. The president's mismanagement of the pandemic has plunged us into the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. And we're experiencing a moral reckoning with racism and systemic injustice that has brought a new coalition of conscience to the streets of our country, demanding change. America is crying out for leadership. Yet we have a president who cares more about himself than the people who elected him. A president who is making every challenge we face even more difficult to solve. But here's the good news. We don't have to accept the failed government of Donald Trump and Mike Pence. In just 83 days, we have a chance to choose a better future for our country.
According to Politico, Joe Biden, quote, prioritized choosing a running mate with whom he was simpatico, as he frequently said, and his months-long search narrowed the list to a handful of women the campaign believed could help energize Democrats in the home stretch of the campaign. In Harris, Biden is hoping to combine both of his priorities, finding a thrilling campaigner as well as a long-term governing partner, end quote. Here's more with Kamala Harris earlier today in Delaware.
And ever since I received Joe's call, I've been thinking, yes, about the first Biden that I really came to know. And that, of course, is Joe's beloved son, one of his beloved sons, Beau. In the midst of the Great Recession, Beau and I spoke on the phone practically every day, sometimes multiple times a day, working together to win back billions of dollars for homeowners from the big banks of the nation that were foreclosing on people's homes. And let me just tell you about Beau Biden. I learned quickly that Beau was the kind of guy who inspired people to be a better version of themselves. He really was the best of us. And when I would ask him, where'd you get that? Where did this come from? He'd always talk about his dad. And I will tell you, the love that they shared was incredible to watch. It was the most beautiful display of the love between a father and a son. And Beau talked about how Joe would spend 4 hours every day riding the rails back and forth from Wilmington to Washington so he could make breakfast for his kids in the morning and make it home in time to tuck them in bed each night. All of this so two little boys who had just lost their mom and their sister in a tragic accident would know that the world was still turning. And that's how I came to know Joe. He's someone whose first response when things get tough is never to think about himself, but to care for everyone else. He's someone who never asks, why is this happening to me? And instead asks, what can I do to make life better for you? His empathy, his compassion, his sense of duty to care for others is why I am so proud to be on this ticket.
That was Kamala Harris earlier today in Delaware. Joining us now is Ken Thomas, political reporter for The Wall Street Journal, who was at the Biden-Harris event in Delaware. My first question to him was, how did the vice president come to choose the one-term senator from California as his running mate?
It was a pretty big field of contenders. They considered initially more than 20 possible running mates. A few months ago, after the initial vet by his search committee, they were able to cut down the list to about 11. And in the end, former Vice President Biden actually did interview 11 candidates. You know, the reporting I've done is indicated that Harris just stood out for a number of reasons. I think she was considered someone who would pass the test as being ready to lead from day one. I think the Biden folks were very impressed by the connection she had both with Joe Biden, but also her political experience. Joe Biden is someone has always valued experience. And, you know, if you look at her record, she's someone who was a district attorney in San Francisco. She was also the attorney general in California. And she also has survived the rigors of a presidential campaign. It obviously didn't end the way that she wanted, but I think she impressed people along the way.
Where does she benefit Joe Biden in this country with certain voters?
The Biden campaign sees her as an asset on a number of fronts. She's somebody who they believe can build support within the diverse communities of the country, among Black voters, Latino and Asian voters. That's an electorate that this 2016 ticket of Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine had some struggling. They struggled with in certain cities. They also see Kamala Harris as an asset in the suburbs and also in cities. They see her as someone who could connect with voters in some of the key battleground cities in say Milwaukee or Philadelphia and also in Florida. Obviously, with the pandemic, the campaigning is going to be mostly virtual, and they're going to have to use the tools that they have at their disposal to allow Harris to connect with these different groups. But I think they see her as someone who could really enhance the ticket and help Biden in areas where he's weak.
What are her vulnerabilities?
I think her main vulnerability is that her campaign didn't end that well in the primaries, and a lot of Democrats felt that she always struggled to have a concise message and a strong rationale on why she was president. We saw in healthcare, for example, she was somebody who had been a co-sponsor of Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All bill. And then when she needed to sell it in the presidential campaign, she had a difficulty doing that. And she eventually came around to sort of a middle position. And so I think there's the thinking that she may not be the dream of every liberal voter in the party. But by the same token, it's going to be difficult for the Trump campaign to try to portray her as a part of a radical left. She's viewed within the Democratic circles as more of a centrist. So it's probably going to be more difficult for the Trump campaign to claim that she would be, a tool of the left.
What are her fundraising capabilities?
She's somebody who enters this race with very strong relationships with some of the party's top donors in California. She lives in Los Angeles, but she was the cut her teeth in politics in San Francisco, and so she's got really strong relationships in Silicon Valley and on the West Coast. She's someone who I believe Wall Street also views as a pretty pragmatic partner and someone they could work with and who's not ideological. And so she's been able to build relationships with Wall Street that I think will help Biden, as he seeks to fundraise during the rest of the way.
After today's announcement and their first event together, where do they go next, whether it's virtually or physically?
Well, that's the key question. Normally you would have some type of bus tour or kickoff campaign where the two candidates would go to some of the biggest battleground states. And they're going to have to do this in a virtual setting. We do expect Senator Harris to help Biden raise money through virtual events. We've seen a number of fundraising notices about that. They're gonna have to just do most of these things remotely initially, and you know we're also then gonna see her at the convention and you know, deliver her speech next Wednesday. But I think they're still trying to figure out. Just given the fluid nature of the pandemic, when they can return to somewhat of a normal schedule in terms of connecting with voters in some of the top battleground states.
What do we know about the speech she'll give next week at the DNC convention?
You know, we don't really know much. Sources have told me that some Obama officials are working on some of the speeches that she'll be delivering. We expect that it will be used as a way to validate Joe Biden. Also, I think we'll see a strong acknowledgement of the historic nature of her candidacy and the idea that the child of immigrants could rise to the level of running mate on a major ticket. And so, we're still not really getting many details on what her speech is going to look like and some of the themes, but I think we'll start to be able to fill in some of those question marks based on her remarks at the start of her campaign.
Ken Thomas with the Wall Street Journal, thank you very much.
Thanks, Greta.
This is Washington Today, and I'm your host, Greta Bronner. We'll get back to the Joe Biden's announcement of Kamala Harris as his running mate in a moment. But first, these headlines. According to the Washington Post, the British economy has plunged into a record-shattering recession, shrinking by a fifth in the second quarter. The official data released Wednesday by the Office for National Statistics showed that gross domestic product fell 20.4% in the second quarter. That's April, May, and June, compared with the first quarter. The downturn reflected losses across all sectors after the country went into a tight lockdown in the third week of March. An Air Force helicopter on Monday was damaged and forced into an emergency landing in Virginia, resulting in injuries to an air crew member and prompting an FBI investigation. Initial findings are that the helicopter was struck by a bullet, resulting in a minor injury to an air crew member and damage to the aircraft. That a quote from an Air Force spokesperson who said in a statement to Politico. The aircraft safely landed, and the incident is currently under investigation. And two Chinese jets briefly flew across the Taiwan Strait median line, the de facto border between China and Taiwan, on Monday morning in what has been a busy year in cross-strait military exercises. While the jets were signaling Beijing's displeasure with U.S. Health Secretary Alex Azar's ongoing visit to Taipei, similar missions have entered Taiwanese airspace and waters at least 20 times this year, according to local media reports. Back at the White House, counselor to the president, Kellyanne Conway, had some reaction to Vice President Joe Biden's selection of Senator Harris as his running mate. From the front lawn at the White House, here's Kellyanne Conway.
No. She's very much part of the radical left, Kristen. She is for the Green New Deal. She is for government-run health care. She is for abortion in the ninth month. And if she's not, I want her to say that today. Because the Democratic Party platform basically is abortion anyone, anytime, anywhere, no restrictions, no regulations, even though we know, and I can introduce you to them, they've been in the White House, people who have survived abortions. We know people who survive outside of the womb at 22, 23, 24 weeks and go on to have great lives, God bless them. So if she's not for late-term abortion, if she's not for sex selection abortion, if she's changed her mind on voting against abortions after the 20th week because she voted against that as a United States Senator, I'm open to hearing that. She's radical on everything. She's
does that make sense?
Both. I think it's, I said she left nobody happy when it came to law and order, which is the number one job she had. She called herself a criminal justice reformer, and she also called herself a top cop. So why don't we just quote her instead of quoting anyone else? And I hope you'll do that, because folks, it's very disheartening to watch. I think some of them should recuse themselves. People excited about what jacket she's going to buy and just giggling, some girl time in a dressing room. It's like, can you imagine, honestly, You've got people who are in the media who were part of her fundraisers. You have the New York Times do a big spread. I mean, a wall-to-wall picture of Kamala Harris as opposed to Mike Pence, you know, hardened reformer, or I don't know, intractable something. Now he's the vice president. So I really hope that we're going to see fair coverage because America deserves that. They're trying to get information, not opinion, when it comes to who these folks are. Carol, what I said was on the issue of law and order and public safety. This was her number one public service job, meaning the place she'd served the longest. And that people are going to dig into that. And on that issue, I think she left everybody unhappy. But on these other issues, as a United States senator, there's no question she's hard left. It actually wasn't even enough for the Democratic Party. I mean, the Democratic primary and caucus voters rejected Kamala Harris. The rest of us are supposed to get excited and vote for her. They rejected her. I think her complete collapse allowed Joe Biden, for a while Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Mayor Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, another woman in the race, and indeed Michael Bloomberg, who apparently was dissatisfied with all of them before he embarrassed himself. None of them were happy with her candidacy, and I'm sure they're all going to be on board now.
That was Counselor to the President Kellyanne Conway. Across town, 2016 Vice Presidential Democratic nominee Tim Kaine, Senator from Virginia, outlined a number of reasons he felt Senator Harris was the right choice. Speaking from the Senate floor, here's Senator Kaine.
Just as we gather together, regardless of party, to mourn when a colleague dies or be together with a colleague who's undergoing a challenge, I think it's good to gather together and acknowledge when something positive happens to a colleague, regardless of our political affiliation. And this is the first opportunity on the Senate floor to offer a word about Senator Kamala Harris, one of our colleagues who, in a historic move, was asked by another former Senate colleague, Vice President Joe Biden, to join him as his preferred nominee to be Vice President of the United States. I've come to know Senator Harris in her 4 years in the Senate, as many of us have through her service on especially the Judiciary Committee and the Intelligence Committee. Her public service track record is a significant one, worthy of praise from her work as a district attorney, first a line prosecutor, and then the elected district attorney in San Francisco, where she focused on trying to keep her community safe, to service as California's attorney general, broadening the portfolio to include environmental justice and consumer protection, and now her work in the Senate since 2016. What I find so compelling about Senator Harris, in addition to her track record of public service during a very long career, is her personal story. Raised as the child of two immigrants, a Jamaican father and an Indian mother, as so many in this country, raised as children of immigrants, developing a passion to serve and a patriotic love of country. She's the first nominee, African-American woman nominee ever to be on a ticket. She's the first South Asian person of South Asian descent ever to be on a ticket. And in the year 2020, when we are commemorating the 100th anniversary of the amendment that guaranteed women the right to vote, I can think of no greater way to celebrate a centennial than for one of our colleagues who is a woman to have a chance to break a glass ceiling that still has existed, whereby no woman in this country has ever been a vice president.
That was Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia. While political news continues to focus on the presumptive Democratic nominee Joe Biden's running mate decision, a deal on a coronavirus package continues to elude Capitol Hill. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell continued to urge lawmakers to come back to the table, but discussion has all but stopped on furthering talks on legislation. From the Senate floor, here's the Senate Majority Leader.
So, Mr. President, do you see the pattern? Kentuckians need more help. Americans need more help. The American people are not done fighting this virus, and Republicans are not done crafting policies to help them. But the difference between now and March is that Democrats seem to be finished being reasonable. The Speaker of the House and the Senate Democratic leader have cut all their colleagues, all of them, all of their committees, out of negotiations. They're doing this alone. And they've declared that none of the priorities I named will see a single dime unless The two of them have declared none of the priorities I have named will see a single dime unless millionaires in Brooklyn and San Francisco get a massive tax cut, states get a $1 trillion slush fund to cover budget problems from long before the pandemic, and we tax essential workers to pay unemployed people a higher salary to stay home. Republicans wanted to reach agreement on all these issues where we could find common ground and fight over the last few issues later. But the Speaker and the Democratic leader say nothing can move unless every one of these unrelated far-left items tags along. These two individuals are letting the wish list of wealthy coastal elites stand between every working family in America and the additional help they deserve. So maybe in a few moments, the Democratic leader or somebody on the other side will try again to explain how this is all some big political game. Well, Kentuckians know differently. They need results. All of our states need results. And Republicans will fight until we actually get an outcome.
That was Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell earlier today. Over the weekend, President Trump signed four executive actions to provide financial relief for Americans amid the coronavirus pandemic. President Trump's executive actions included $400 per week in supplemental unemployment aid, a replacement of the program passed under the CARES Act earlier this year that gave unemployed people $600 a week until the federal program expired at the end of July. With more on what individual states may or may not have to pay, here's Director of U.S. Economic Council Larry Kudlow earlier today at the White House.
I will just say that the executive orders from the president have provided significant incentives to work and go back to work and create jobs, and also to help the 16 million unemployed who still have a lot of heartbreak. No question. We want to help them, and we did with our unemployment reform plan. The payroll tax deferral is a terrific. It gives a cash wage increase, by my lights, about $1,100 in the next 4 months. And it also provides, at the margin, an incentive to work and an incentive to come back to work. So I think those are terrific things, and I believe we will cover the eviction issue. It has not been a big problem so far, but we will cover that and help out with the student loan deferment. So the president's executive orders, which I believe will be executed, Democrats are in a corner on that. I don't think they're going to oppose it. But in any event, those are very helpful, yes.
Larry, on the tax deferral issue, as I understand it, it doesn't apply to the self-employed. Was that intentional, or did you?
No, I got to check that. I don't know why it wouldn't apply to the unemployed.
Yeah.
I mean, to the self-employed. Once upon a time, in another life, I was an LLC S Corp, so we had payroll tax withholding. It was a small company, I admit, but I don't see why it wouldn't apply. I will check that for you. That's an important question. I know it, by the way, the self-employed are eligible for the unemployment benefits.
Right.
I know that. You know what? I'm going to leave that. I'm going to stay in my lane. I'm going to leave that. I just think the president acted aggressively and boldly because nothing else was going on.
The president also signed executive actions that would encourage federal efforts to help renters and homeowners avoid eviction or foreclosure for failing to make their monthly payments, defer the payroll tax from September 1st to December 31st, 2020, for employees making $100,000 or less a year, and suspend federal student loan payments and set interest rates to 0% through December 31st, 2020. The current student loan relief program was set to expire on September 30th. Russia on Tuesday became the first country to approve a coronavirus vaccine, a move that was met with international skepticism and unease because the shots have only been studied in dozens of people. President Vladimir Putin announced the health ministry's approval and said one of his two adult daughters already was inoculated. Here's the Russian president speaking through a translator.
We've registered the first in the world vaccine against coronavirus, and I'll ask Mr. Murashko to comment on that. I know that the vaccine is quite effective. It creates a stable immunity, and it has passed all the necessary preparations and steps, but let's hear out what the professional has to say. Thank you, Mr. Putin. Yes, indeed, we have registered the first vaccine against COVID-19.
Mr. Putin said the vaccine underwent the necessary tests and was shown to provide lasting immunity to the coronavirus, although Russian authorities have offered no proof to back up claims of safety or effectiveness. Finally today, a dip into the C-SPAN video library. Back in 1996, we talked to Geraldine Ferraro, who had been the 1984 vice presidential nominee with Democrat Walter Mondale.
There was a period of time which, during which Fritz met with women representatives from around the country. He also invited out a whole bunch of us to talk to him about what our views were on the vice presidency. We went out to Minnesota. But when all that was going on, I never really thought that it was going to happen. I just kind of thought it was a nice thought that we would at least talk about opening doors of opportunity for women. But I never actually thought it would happen. I certainly didn't think if it did, it was going to be me. And I went off to San Francisco because I was getting ready to present the platform to the convention. This was my big opportunity. I was going to be able to speak in prime time. And I went out to California. I was in San Francisco. I was going to give a speech. And that night, John Reilly called and said, could I stop by? And he was the person who was Fritz's closest one on the vice presidential selection. He called me up. He said, can I stop and see you? I said, sure. And so he came to the hotel room, and he said, we went through a whole discussion of the vice presidency, and he said, do you realize you'd have to give up your congressional seat? And I said, of course I do. And he said, would you be willing to do that? And I said, yes. And it was at that point that I realized that it was between me and Diane at that point. And what ended up happening was, he said, be in the hotel room at about 4 o'clock, I think it was, the next day. And I got a call from Fritz, and Fritz said, I would like for you to be on the ticket. I would like for you to be my running mate. And I said to him, I'm terribly honored. And, of course, said yes. And then after I hung up, I was in a state of shock, and I had one of my staff people from my congressional staff was outside in the office, and I opened the door, and I said, guess what? We're making history. It was fascinating.
Since 1987, C-SPAN has been documenting the appearances of political figures with 260,000 hours in its free, searchable video library. Now that the Democratic vice presidential candidate is known, you can see her 195 appearances and what she has had to say over the years. Watch, clip, and share at cspan.org. That's it for Washington Today. If you've missed any part of this program or want to hear it again, you can find it by searching Washington Today wherever you get your podcasts or go to our website, cspan.org/podcast. Have a great evening.
C-SPAN's Washington Journal. Every day we're taking your calls live on the air on the news of the day, and we'll discuss policy issues that impact you. Coming up Thursday morning, with the announcement of Kamala Harris as the vice presidential nominee, we'll talk about campaign 2020 as the major parties head into their respective conventions with National Journal senior national political columnist Josh Krausauer. And we'll talk about the nomination and the growing power of black women in American politics with Purdue University Associate Professor of Political Science and African American Studies, Nadia Brown. Watch C-SPAN's Washington Journal, live at 7 Eastern, Thursday morning. And be sure to join the discussion. And live Sunday at 8 a.m. Eastern, C-SPAN's Washington Journal and American History TV on C-SPAN 3 mark the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage and the ratification of the 19th Amendment. We'll take your phone calls, Facebook comments, text messages, and tweets.